Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Labor Day Monday, a very good new year to our Jewish listeners, and welcome to the end of summer. Hard to believe, as it always is, we get to this juncture. It certainly is gorgeous up here after a little unsettled Sunday at the spa. Going to finish on a high note, it looks like, and from a racing standpoint, it doesn't get really better than having the kind of hopeful that closes out the stakes card and the stakes season, at Saratoga. A terrific hopeful with headliners, two for two players in High Oak and Witt, but a number of other interesting candidates. You got a similar scenario out west for the Del Mar Juvenile. Yesterday, the debutante in California, the spin away here. We'll get into all of this. So much to absorb from the weekend. Jockey Club Gold Cup, Max Player. And Steve Asmussen is going to join us at about the 40 mark. And Steve, obviously, finishing the meet strong. He's not going to win the training title. That's going to Chad Brown. But in a lot of ways, the meet, it was particularly strong for Steve Asmussen and memorable when you fold in the record-breaking training victories celebration that, you know, coming at Saratoga, you know, an added element to the good 2-year-olds and the stake winners, etc. Echo Zulu yesterday, and in a lot of ways, both War Player from an older horse standpoint and Echo Zulu from a younger, you know, from a 2-year-old filly standpoint, really right in the Asmussen barn wheelhouse. Max Player out of the Suburban immediately zeroed in on this spot. Echo Zulu, very similar, you know, off the early season success. You know, turned right to this and was, you know, simply going to wait. You know, no other assignment or no Adirondack. Just break the maiden on opening day. Look to closing weekend to win the grade one. And the barn is very strong doing that. It's been a spectacular meet. So we'll let Steve kind of opine. And, you know, we did this a little bit with him in that conversation after the record-breaking win. But, you know, now there's more even to discuss. And he obviously not finished by any stretch because they've got some opportunities today. And with Kentucky Downs underway, we'll probably fold that in because he's got runners in both the juvenile stakes today at Kentucky Downs. We'll talk to Hammer later and get some, you know, first early snapshots from Kentucky Downs after yesterday's interesting start to the season. They've only got one more card to draw, the Sunday card. They put together the Saturday card, which I'm excited to be there for Thursday. But they put together that Saturday card, which is just mind blowing. Every card, you know, if you're a turf fan, every card is like a skull busting, eye crossing scenario. It's just crazy. Crazy. You know, the $2 million races Saturday, the Turf Sprint and the Turf Cup, 12 horses in each. And first time I'm looking at the morning line, actually, and Casa Creed, the 7-2 favorite, and Got Stormy, the 9-2 second choice. So a pretty heady week, in fact, for our friend Lee Einsiedler. I'm sure. I know. Yesterday, I could tell Lee was getting anxious about today and the hopeful. Well, Steve Asmussen, in the meantime, as mentioned, Steve's got horses in both the Del Mar Futurity and the hopeful. So we'll get a glance at that. Gunite, who's done a lot of developing and would have to take one more step forward, it seems, to edge his way in. And then at Del Mar, he's got American Experiment with Rispoli in this evening's Del Mar Futurity. And if you haven't thought about how long the day is going to be, yeah, you're going to have to labor through Labor Day. It goes till I think 9 o'clock or 9:30. Is that, am I right? 9 o'clock. Yeah, 9:07 is the last post. The Futurity goes tonight at 8:37 Eastern. So, yeah, it is. It's a marathon closing out, and the 40 days of Saratoga, of course. I mean, we got plenty of time this week to summarize things. I guess I got until Wednesday to summarize things, because once we get to Kentucky Downs for Thursday and Friday, that is going to obviously fill the docket. But today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, we'll try to weave everything together, and that'll include, we'll talk to Mig at our start of hour two. We'll check in with Hammer at the bottom of hour two and talk about yesterday. I think Pavel Metka is going to join us. Very clever effort by Metka, who knows clearly what kind of horse can succeed at Kentucky Downs. And there were so many things after the fact about a credit that just, I mean, I immediately thought, it took me a second and I had to go look and see who the horse was that Metka had brought to Kentucky Downs and had wired a field. It was One Go All Go, you know, who had won a couple of stakes as a three-year-old, and he brought One Go All Go to Kentucky Downs and wired a field at 8-1. And there were so many things about that win yesterday that just, I winced afterward. I mean, he never should have been 35-1. I mean, but that's the beauty of this venue and having fields of, you know, 10, 11, 12, you know, that the horse gets lost at 36-1. Had to send out a congratulations to one of our favorite breeders in the sport and one of the most consistent producers of nice horses, the amazing Bo Lane. This is a Bo Lane production. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The funny thing about it was I keyed Rusty Arnold with Cellist, who ran fine and just, you know, didn't have the punch up the hill. And a credit through the cracks. He ended up with a short price favorite on the Oak side of things with the Brad Cox Adventuring, 6-5. And then, you know, one of the big numbers, and was what, the fourth longest shot on the board. It's funny, the board was concentrated. There were four or five horses under 10-1, and then it jumped up into the teens, and then it jumped up into the 30s and 40s and 50s. It had sort of three levels of player in that Dueling Ground Derby yesterday to get things going. And of course, you had a 50-1 shot early on the card, which got things Yeah, clear for action for Wes Fletcher. Joe Sharp with the early double to get things rolling. Yeah, there was a little bit of everything. Steve Asmussen won. Steve won a horse with a horse, won an allowance race at some point in there. I got to go back and look, but I know he won something. And there it is, Americanus. Joel Rosario, who fled Saratoga to get started and be able to take advantage of, you know, the opportunity at Kentucky Downs, and several other jocks after today will do the same from Saratoga over. And I imagine, you know, Pratt and Rispoli, et cetera, for midweek. So Kentucky Downs underway. Ellis wrapped up. Saratoga and Del Mar reach their finales. And so much good racing. The Flower Bowl, Warlike Goddess, Bill Mott sitting pretty to wrap up. I mean, Bill's somebody else who, you know, isn't going to win the training title, but has had a spectacular meet and can, you know, put a bow on it. You had, forget the stakes action for a minute. You had performances Saturday and Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, you had allowance winners that one was anticipated, certainly. I mean, certainly Flight Line last evening at Del Mar, that was no surprise, and we had, you know, we had talked about it with Jay and I think with Brad too, with Brad Free, but that was just. I mean, I'm sure to some it's kind of a paid workout, you know, winning by a dozen. But if he was racing against the clock, you know, we talked about it while we were out there. That is a very deep, slow surface. He stopped the clock in 108 flat and was basically on cruise control, you know, the final 16th under Flavian. So, I mean, who knows? Now, he's going to have to face pressure. He may have to face Baby Yoda. Are you kidding me? How about Baby Yoda? Saturday. I mean, we talked about how important that allowance looked with some big returnees, most notably, at least to me, going in, his stablemate, Olympiad, coming back. And Baby Yoda did have the advantage of recency. And he did go off shorter than Olympiad did, actually. Olympiad was 7-1 and Baby Yoda was 6-1. And Baby Yoda took money right from the bell and was, you know, was being bet. That was not, you know, he was 6-1 morning line and held there. This is a crazy story. It's a horse that debuted for $10,000. Maiden 10 for Charlie Frock. And we could probably, really should, you know, we had Chuck Frock win that, you know, that race early in the meet that one of our, in fact, I've got to send in my DePaula play of the day. I got a bonus play. I thought Saturday was the last one, and we got a good run, but fell short. So I got to make a decision. And I was trying to find a good price for. It's another tough card. The cards have been very competitive, really, all closing week, and today's no exception. But that race with Baby Yoda, you know, wins at first asking. In the slop at Pimlico, 69 buyer. Don't know if that got the attention of Adam Wachtel, but then wins an allowance on a fast track. Now that's a little more that confirms the debut, but wins an allowance with a 79 buyer and gets purchased. Spent, you know, good part of the summer after that, going back to June. Was it essentially, you know, from the start of July, was preparing and had, you know, had got nice work notes, had a bullet best of 153 in August, you know, 2 weeks ago, 46-3. But this was unbelievable because, you know, he was dueling with Ducale, who went favored. And, you know, as somebody that bet Olympiad and was hawking Olympiad to you, I'm watching Alvarado, you know, basically set up shop and watch the two speeding pace setters and figure, oh, boy, this is perfect. Olympiad's going to go right around. He went right around Ducale. And by the time he got around Ducale, Baby Yoda had given him the slip and was widening. Just a jaw-dropping 114 buyer, best of the season, faster than Nick's go. Just crazy. So two incredible allowance performances in addition to everything else that went on. Like, as I mentioned, Warlike Goddess. It did look, in fact, going into the Jockey Club Gold Cup, like Bill Mott was ready to, you know, sweep the late pick three. And Force Adoro, who seemed to have the pace advantage, up on the lead, Max Player, and another, you know, somebody else who's had a wonderful meet, Ricardo Santana Jr., and not just for Asmussen, has had plenty of other notable success for other barns. It's been a very good summer for Ricardo, as John Imbriel emphasizes, Santana. I got to ask John Imbriel at some point. There's certain names and, you know, that he's gotten into a style with certain jocks. It's kind of funny, and even trainers too. Like when he enunciates Eddie Barker's name, Eddie Barker. I don't know why. I should ask him how he decides that, or if it just happened once and then he went on with it. So, it's just countless. How about the Del Mar Derby Saturday night? Peter Miller. Peter Miller. You know, we talked to him, 2 weeks ago after the big weekend with Mo Forza. And, you know, he seemed poised to win the training title at Del Mar, but he's got his foot, down on the floor. Big upsetter last night in the Phillies turf for Gary Barber, Liam's Dove, Kyle Fry, and I could have used that Kyle Fry effort on Saturday night in the in the Del Mar Derby. None above the law, though. Joe Bravo with an absolute brilliant ride to win that Del Mar Derby. That was something. Down inside, you know, it's that tricky opening by the chute, and wow. I mean, really, really high wire act. Joe Bravo's had a great summer, and he's staying out there. You saw that late. I don't know if it came out Friday or late last week, and I didn't mention it, but Joe Bravo's staying in California, and who can blame him? He's been a good fit there, and you knew, you know, that turf course and his riding style, where he, you know, particularly good from off the pace. You just knew that oval was going to really suit him at Del Mar, and it really has. That was, and I will be honest, because it hurt. I was live to two horses in the pick five for real money, and to three horses in the pick four for a buck. And flashiest would have been fine. Flashiest would have produced essentially, I think, in the $4,000 range. And the horse of Fry's, and Fry kind of got stopped, and he kind of wrapped up. That was too bad on Jimmy Blue Jeans. I thought he was in decent position. You know, that was the giant price I was looking for. Pick five was 17,000. Listen, you get live to that spot. That's the bet. You know, that's what you hope for. I thought for a couple of strides until I saw Bravo. I thought flashiest was going to get up and was you know, having to work out a trip from the 13 berth of Cedillo with a very nice ride. So I don't mean to be selfish, but that would have been okay, right? That would have been all right. I'm sure some of you played. We got so much to do, and we're going to do plenty of handicapping as the morning unfolds. Nick Tamaro in hour three. We'll talk to Nick about his thoughts today, and I told you, Hammer, Rich Migliori, and we're going to start it with one of the weekend's other great stories. And frankly, if you watched me and Seth yesterday, and we were joined by Sean Clancy, if you did not see the show yesterday, the TV show, Loose on the Lead, it was particularly loose. It was out of control, actually, and I was just ridiculous. I was in a great mood. Yeah, I'm still in a great mood. But we had tremendous fun yesterday. So if you watch only one, if you watch only one edition of Loose on the Lead, make it yesterday's. But I thought one of the great stories when we talked to Sean Clancy, I thought one of the real stories of the summer was the variety. And this is true every year. There's always a number of stake winners that come into town and are, you know, kind of lower profile outfits. And that happened on Saturday in the Prioress. And Brett Brinkman is going to join us first. And Case, let me send you that number because I don't think you've got it. I do not remember having Brett on the show. And you know, certainly there's any number of Louisiana premier nights and so forth that probably could have reached for Brett, but I certainly am not disappointed that the first opportunity to have him on comes from Cilla, the California Chrome filly that he co-bred and co-owns. Upsets Super Sensational in the Prioress, and you know, the name in the program, of course, was the terrific Charlie Baker. And Charlie had actually won, did he win the race before? He won one of the early, Charlie won one of the early races on the card. He won the second with Roaming Union, just a 20 claimer. But you know Charlie Baker does a tremendous job. But he was strictly saddling, and Brett was on hand to celebrate. And I frankly don't blame him for doing this, because you know the workman's comp and the paperwork, and it's just a nightmare. So he had Charlie saddle and appear in the program, and Charlie was happy to do it, but he was also very happy to point everybody in the direction of Brett Brinkman as soon as everybody congregated in the winner's circle for the Prioress. And you know, this filly, there was a lot, there was something there. There was no doubt. And if you, you know, for those of us that, you know, utilize things like Thoroughgraph, those last two starts at Evangeline and at Monmouth, they were absolutely credible, and they were right in line with, you know, the horses that were being considered, you know, as an alternative to Super Sensational. And Tyler Gaffney-Owen with a very good ride and a great finish to turn away Super Sensational. It was one of, you know, it was early in the card, so I think people probably forget, you know, how good that race was. I mean, we've been treated to these really left and right down the stretch at Saratoga. And Brett Brinkman joins us to celebrate and to take due credit. And I think Bentley Combs figures into this story, too. Brett, congratulations.
Thank you.
Brett, you were on hand, and so it's really, it's you bringing her to Saratoga. I mean, talk about the spot, and talk about what has been consistent development to get her to end up winning a Grade Two at the spa.
Well, we were fortunate, to be able to make the trip and stuff. I mean, as you said, COVID has been a deciding factor in this Phillies' progress every step, it seems like, with racing delayed last year to a certain extent. And then actually when we sent her up to New York for the Frisette, I was actually 2 days out of the hospital from having COVID myself. And so, it's been something that we've had to deal with, in our travel plans and so forth, and, the labor shortage and so forth and so on. But, we had scoped out the Prioress. I had put a check mark by this race after the win at Evangeline. We knew we were coming north right after that with her, and it worked out where they come off the grass at Monmouth, and, she got to run her race on the surface that we preferred. And then, after that race, the Prioress was definitely where we were headed. We had tentatively marked the Charlestown Oaks, but was not real enthusiastic about trying the second turn.
That's interesting too, because it kind of figures in. I mean, you've been very direct for the most part, and you can see when you look at that attempt at Delta in the premier night star going two turns, and Monmouth and the sorority last year too. And I can understand taking that shot, but it's pretty clear after. After the Louisiana Legend performance and the Blue Sparkler, that this is what she wants to do. And if I'm not mistaken, I said this on TV yesterday, Brett, she is California Chrome's exclusive domestic stake winner, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading in the stats anyway. And, he was a star upon himself. I mean, that as a racehorse and stuff, and then, got ousted for plenty of money out of Kentucky from the sire ranks. But, when you look at him, he's a good-looking individual and stuff. And there was a lot of different factors that factored into us sitting at the bar to him. And, it wasn't just from a commercial aspect. It was a lot more with running the offspring in mind.
Well, and let's talk about that. Then we'll come back to her, to her season and everything that went on Saturday and what it means to you. But you're co-breeder with Dale Ladner, and you mentioned sitting at the bar. She's a super productive broodmare, and this is her third straight stake winner. I mean, she's dropping things left and right, right? I mean, I remember that club car. I think that was Ben Holbrook, I think.
Yeah, Ben's owner bought that horse, and Ben's done a phenomenal job with that filly, just managing her along and letting her be who she is. And, what can I say? I mean, sitting in the bar has just been phenomenal for us. We stretched her out as a three-year-old filly, bought her as a yearling, went on, stretched her out as a three-year-old filly in State Bred Company and so forth. And she was capable of getting the two turns against three-year-old fillies that year. And but she predominantly wanted to be a sprinter. I mean, it was the first crop of Into Mischief. Nobody knew, that they would run on the grass and so forth and so on at that point. And, we kept her on the dirt, let her be a sprinter, and she was just very good to us.
And I got to ask, I mean, you bring up that first crop. Sitting at the bar was a 2010 foal. Talk about that decision. And, you were way ahead of the curve.
Well, it's pretty funny. I mean, she sold at our regional sale. And I'm not sure. I mean, she might have been the only horse in those guys' consignment. At the time, she was either one or two horse consignment, and she was fresh off of of having a little corrective work done on a knee, and you know, the blemish was still there. And I remember after, you know, when we were buying her, Mr. Ladner looked over at me. I think she was at 28 or something like that. And I said, one more time, just bid one more time. And
wow,
it's become kind of a joke with us, you know,
wow,
whether we'd have stopped at the one more bid or not. But, you know, we got her, and the rest is history. I mean, she just went on to just become a phenomenal type horse for us, and continues to do so. I mean, just continues to do so. And, you know, the Into Mischief part of it, I mean, every month he was just, you know, getting winner after winner, and, you know, you know, it just turned into what it turned into.
Unbelievable. And I remember when she started out, and she was, as a 2-year-old, she ran in the Princess, in the Delta Princess, and then you took advantage from that point, you know, of the Louisiana program, you know, the Champions and the Premier and the Legends and the Cup and all those crazy races. And she ended up winning 11 times in 19 starts, 700,000, and as of right now, it's amazing. I mean, the Club Car was her first. She was 30,000 in that Louisiana breeder sale, and Club Car by Malibu Moon, 444,000, and was $120,000 purchase by KK, by Mrs. Ball, and then Jack the Umpire, 179,000, 4-time winner. And now Scylla, it's unbelievable. 5 for 10. Jack the Umpire is 4 for 16. And there's a Lord Nelson filly yearling.
Lord Nelson, nice kind of filly. That's a yearling. We kind of kept with that pulpit line. It crosses really good with her. You know, and he was a good racehorse upon himself.
Yeah.
And you know, so we stayed with that. Not many people know this, but her first foal was actually a quarter horse. She when we had to retire, was forced to retire. It was in mid-April, and I didn't want to start off her thoroughbred breeding program in mid-April. So we actually bred her to a quarter horse, and embryo transferred the foal into a donor mare. And she had a beautiful, beautiful filly, very correct. And we ended up a family member of mine bought her, and she went 4 races running against the quarter horses. And he's breeding her now. She's back. She's in foal first time this year. So that's kind of the unknown story about it. We wanted to, and the whole logic behind it was just we wanted to see what kind of foal and how much dominance her genes would have when she laid down and had one. And you know, we felt like that quarter horse looked a lot like the mama, and you know, we raised it to a yearling so we could kind of watch it and see it grow. And subsequently, you know, we bred Sitting in the Bar to Malibu Moon early the next breeding season. So,
wow, is that smart? Not only that, Brett, not only do you take advantage of you know, seeing what kind of stamping, but you also get a first foal to kind of, you know, open things up so that when she starts getting covered by thoroughbreds, there's that much more room, and you get a better size foal.
Correct.
Wow, that is clever. As I'll tell you, Cajun types. It's just.
Well, I was born in Louisiana and I lived there and stuff, but I was actually raised in Florida. So.
So you got all kinds of credit you can spread around. Unbelievable.
I was very fortunate. I was very fortunate to come up under some really good horsemen.
Explain that. In fact, flesh that out. I couldn't remember if you've been on with me or not. And if not, it's an overdue pleasure.
I don't think so.
No, yeah, I don't think so either.
But I was born in Louisiana, and I moved to Florida with my aunt and uncle at 12 years old, and they managed a big farm outside of Ocala, and it just kind of a fluke thing. I stayed and was raised there, and grew up on a huge full purpose, you know, nursery. And I mean, we had everything. We did it from A to Z. I mean, we mated them, we bred them, we foaled them, we raised them, we raced them. I mean, you know, we did everything. And my uncle was a real stickler for, you know, if you were going to walk in that barn, you was going to be capable of doing it from A to Z. And, you know, I tip my hat to that, to him and my aunt, you know, all that every day.
When you went to the racetrack, how old were you?
Well, he started sending me to Tampa, you know, and stuff to run horses at a very early age. I mean, I was hauling horses there when I first had my driver's license for him. And then he sent me, actually, when Birmingham, the first racetrack I went to was Birmingham, after Tampa with Todd Pletcher's dad. J.J. Pletcher had a string of horses there. And that's where I first spent time at the races and stuff. But that was kind of the start of the racetrack part of it.
Interesting. And who else did you work for before you went on your own?
You know, mainly just JJ. I mean, I was back home. My grandfather trained horses, and I had a huge network of family friends and stuff that I had fiddled around with and worked with. You know, but most of it all came from working for my family. I mean, it just, you know, just doing stuff and, you know, having to get it done. I mean, that was the thing. You know, it wasn't just for clients or anything like that. It was our horses, and you had to get them ready and go and make it all work. So, I mean, that's how we come along. And then, you know, I've been fortunate through the years to work for different owners in different capacities and so forth. I did a long stint with Arthur Appleton for Bridlewood Farm.
Wow. Sure.
Did a long stint for Bill and Corinne Hollybrook. You know, so I've been very fortunate in that aspect, being able to be around some nice horses and work for some good people.
Well, obviously, I mean, you've won your share, and even though it's not going to say in the stats, like an right? It still only says graded stakes placed trainer, but everybody. How about Charlie, who just immediately stepped back on Saturday and said, "That's your man right there."
Oh, I tell you, you know, I was fortunate enough to run upon Lisa Whitaker to help us out at Delaware this year to groom for us and, you know, take in and take care of this filly for me. And when I started, you know, looking to run her there and stuff, and Bentley, I'd been stabled with Bentley at the fairgrounds in the same barn, so it was a real easy process with him, but he didn't get stalls at Saratoga this year, so I started looking to, you know, to run her up there, because like I said, COVID, you always have to have it in the back of your brain right now with my stable anyway, because, you know, we can't just up and send somebody all the time with a horse somewhere. And, you know, I've had John Stevens help me at Monmouth a little bit. He and I go way back from Ocala, but, one day she just piped up and she said, well, you know, Mr. Baker, she said, I work for him. You'll love him. He's a great guy. So she gave me his number and made the contact for me. And I tell you, I can't say enough about Mr. Baker. He was just phenomenal. He was everything that she said he was and more. And, you know, just a great guy and a class act. They were more than accommodating. And, you know, I wanted him to saddle a horse. He said, no, you saddle your horse. And, you know, and he was just great. I can't say enough. It made it real, real easy win, lose, or draw to go up there and support the New York program and run my filly where I wanted to run it.
Well, and Tyler Gaffleone, it's funny. even Tyler was sort of a pass through, because it was Bentley, I understand, that booked the mount with Matt Musiker. Matt he said did. He never talked to you.
Yeah, he did. I talked to Bentley, and Bentley goes, look, I'm not getting stalls up there, he said, but I've already talked to Tyler. And, you know, and it's funny, because Tyler's grandfather rode horses for my uncle back in the day. Bobby Gaglione, and
wow,
you know, and so I was, and actually before the race, that's more what Tyler and I was talking about in the paddock was, you know, that fact, and I was fortunate enough to meet his grandfather as a kid, and you know, so you know, this whole racing world is so intertwined and networked and stuff that, you know, for the stayers and the people that are in it, and it's in their blood and stuff. I mean, you're not going to talk to anybody that, you know, y'all know somebody in common, and that's just the way it is, and that's part of what I love about it. So yeah, but it was funny how, you know, and when I called the stewards to make sure everything was on the up and up and stuff, Mr. Hawkins, and he said, no, I don't think there'll be a problem, you know, because Bentley had nominated her and so forth, and it was under his name in the nominations. But when I transferred the papers, I transferred them to Mr. Charlie's, and, you know, so it was, but, you know, that's what's great about, you know, with these, trying to work with these racing organizations. I mean, although it's hard for me to go up there and get a license to run one horse, you know, that's part of it, but it's more of the COVID thing. It really is. I mean, I've lost relatives, and I will stick with it. Jesus. And I really respect it. And, you know, I didn't want to get caught in a situation to penalize the horse in the event that I couldn't go, or, you know, something like that. And that's always something in the back of your head nowadays.
Well, and things just could not have worked out more perfectly. Tyler gave her a tremendous ride, and in fact, she was, you know, she was closer to the pace than we actually have seen her of late. Obviously, you know, countless opportunities going forward. You know, she matched up her best figure. What's on the agenda? Have you and Dale thought about what's next?
Yeah, a little bit. We've kind of kicked it around. I mean, we want to really keep this filly around for the long haul. I think there's still some more development in her. You know, she really, really showed a lot of maturity coming into the Evangeline race. I felt like, you know, just watching her develop body-wise, but also mental. She got more into racing. It seemed like after the Kentucky trip, you know, we had a pretty good excuse coming out of the Kentucky race. Colby, who's ridden a lot of horses for me, actually rode her mother for me some. You know, he come back and he was just shaking his head. He said, "Brett, around the turn, I'm thinking I'm going to get a pretty good piece of this thing." And he said, and all of a sudden her head floated, and I saw the same thing. And I said, "Colby, I don't know." I said, "Let me get back to the barn and assess this thing." And well, it didn't take me long to get back to the barn. I didn't have to do that. As soon as she walked off, she had just tore her back bandages all up and run down dramatically. I mean, like, probably one of the worst times I'd ever had a horse run down. And immediately I hopped on the phone and called Mr. Ladner and told him, I said, you know, I said, "You can draw a line through this race." I said, I think I've already solved this problem. And, you know, sure enough, we got her home, you know, and worked on some shoeing and done a little something different, and you know, we were back in action. So, and I thought the race at Evangeline was, you know, us fixing that and her getting into her races, a little more maturity and stuff like that. And you know, she was double entered that night against 3-year-olds. We had her in against straight 3-year-olds again, going 2-turn against like a 5-horse field. And boy, they were beating me up pretty good for making a choice to sprint her against those older tough mares. But you know, I didn't figure nobody was faster than her. She's pretty fast mare when you want to pull the trigger.
Well, the triggers got pulled, and every decision that was made turns out to be the right one. And you know, they win a Grade Two at Saratoga. I mean, put that in perspective too, Brink.
Oh yeah. Well, I tell you, it's thrill of a lifetime, obviously. And you know, I felt like we were coming with a live horse. I felt good about everything leading up to the race. She shipped up there phenomenally well. settled in, you know, thanks to Mr. Baker and them, you know, unbelievably good. When I got up there that morning, it was funny. I was supposed to get up there about 11, and I ended up showing up about 8:30 on the drive from Delaware. And Lisa, the groom, asked me, said, "Why are you here so early?" I said, "Well, amazingly, I couldn't sleep, so I just got up and took off." But she, you know, winning at Saratoga. I mean, what can you say about it? It's the ultimate. And you know, for her to show up there and outrun a well thought of filly is super sensational. And the way she done it, I mean, just, you know, it looked like Super Sensational was going to cruise right by her, and she just dug back in and went back at it again with her and prevailed. I mean, it got a little tighter, you know, in the stretch than anybody wants to see in racing. But I thought everybody rode their horses fair, and you know, everybody had a shot at it. So, you know, what can you say? I mean, you take a little old filly you breed and raise and go every step. And I mean, like, she's our bullet, you know, she's our one bullet. I don't have that many bullets in the barn. So, you know, to be able to go and accomplish something like that is over the moon. I don't think we've come down yet.
I don't blame you. And I can imagine, what kind of breeder awards are there for you, open company and graded stake from the Louisiana program?
She gets 18%. 18%, you know, to do that from the Louisiana Thoroughbred Breeders Association. And, you know, that's not chicken feed. And then I'll tell you, the reason we decided to pull that mare in Louisiana that year, we were going to give her the next year off. She was late in her foaling cycle. She moved us back 2 years in a row and carried 12 months. And so we decided to end up skipping her that year. And we took advantage of the breeding program there, and I have a little farm there, so I was able to bring her back out of Kentucky and you know, take her out of that program for a year and put her in the Louisiana program. So, you know, it just kind of worked out from that aspect. And she's back in Kentucky. We keep her in that KTDF program up there. She lives up there. And got her back in fold of Frosted. I like the Nick. I thought Frosted was a high caliber, you know, race horse and stuff, and you know, we feel good about it. But that's our program there. So
unbelievable. 18% of 18% of the winner share, or 18% of the
correct 18% of the winner share. Correct.
So like another $35,000.
Yeah, it's a good bump. It's a good bump. You know, it's a good bump. I mean, both that and the KTDF programs are good incentive programs for breeders. You know, I just wish, you know, I just wish more breeders could race. You know, I mean, I think it would really help our racing out quite a bit and stuff. And you know, I'm fortunate to have Mr. Ladner, who, you know, was primarily just a yearling buyer, and now he had a couple of nice stakes mares that he decided to keep and breed, and he races those horses. We did try to sell her just because we were getting some pressure from a couple of guys about, you know, marketing her, but sitting at the bar had not accomplished broodmare-wise what she's accomplished now. So we, you know, we felt like at $120,000, she was, as a restricted bred filly at worst, she was very capable of winning that money back unless something bad happened. So we decided to keep and run. And like you said, sometimes it's just meant to happen. You know, things are meant to happen, and you can't duck them. They just going to happen. You know? And it was funny, Mr. Ladner, he didn't get to come to the race because he was marrying his youngest daughter off in Atlanta on Friday night. So
he had to skip
the race, and he called and wanted to know, you know, how everything and so forth and so on. I said, "Well, Dale, it's already decided." I said, "You know, the results are in. We just haven't went and done it yet." And he goes, "What's that?" I said, "We win." Said, "That's the way it works."
Unbelievable. So great. Brett, I'm just thrilled for you, for Mr. Ladner, and the chance for you to come to Saratoga like this and win. And obviously, there's plenty more to come for Scylla, but pleased to get you on this morning and be able to introduce you a little bit to some people that, you know, to a wider audience. And that was, you know, that was really. It's part of what Saratoga is all about. Steve Asmussen's joining us next, and you know, Steve had an amazing, you know, amazing Saratoga season. Not done yet, but you know, that's part of the charm. You know, that you come up and win a graded stake like that, and congratulations.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Steve, and. You know, thank you guys, and say hello to Steve for me.
I think he may be on. Actually, he may be on the line. Steve, are you there?
Congratulations. A great win.
Brett, could you hear Steve? Oh, did we lose Brett? I guess we did. I guess he hung up. Well, all right. I had a feeling you must have rubbed elbows with Brett Brinkman, Steve.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, you got one more day here, and 39 days worth of Saratoga, Steve, and it's been pretty magical, right? I mean, from opening day.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a dream season. You know, setting the record with family here at Saratoga on Whitney Day, I don't think you can top that. I think the rest of, you know, we're, you know, blessed with some unbelievably talented horses, and Scott and the crew have done an amazing job with them, and I think that we've, you know, definitely, you know, Ricardo is reaching new levels now, and it's all coming together, and we've just, like as you mentioned earlier, hopefully it's not over. We go, especially got the hopeful today and feel like we have a big chance in there, but it's been awfully nice to this point.
Well, and there's a few things. I won't keep you too long today because, you know, it's a race day. But I thought that the way in which Echo Zulu and Max Player coming out of, you know, coming out of the Suburban, the way in which you basically circled these two assignments, the Spinaway and the Jockey Club, and everybody. You talk about Scott, you got to fold in, of course, Toby Sheets and his work with Max Player. I mean, it's obvious that with a target, you guys are just, you know, second to none getting a horse ready to peak on a certain day.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, there's a lot at stake with Max Player getting his first grade one in the Jockey Club. Backing up his performance in the Suburban, and then of course, you know, Echo Zulu, with her, you know, fortunate enough to train Gunrunner's first Grade One winner, which I assure you it won't be. It'll be one of many of his Grade One winners, but we will forever have had the first one. Made it very special.
Let's quickly get a handle on these two performances, and then we didn't talk after Travers Weekend, so I got to get a couple in on that. But for Max Player, talk about the situation with the Jockey Club being moved up here, and I think it's a very clever decision by Naira to put the 10 furlong race further back from the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then if trainers want to utilize the Woodward mile and an eighth leading into the 10 furlong Classic, they've got that option. I'm assuming Max Player, you'll train up from this point to the Classic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he likes to be where he's going to run. We'll get him moved out to California and acclimate. We will go to Del Mar with him as soon as they let us in there. That's working for him. That's what we would like to do. He's a horse that has always had a very high level of talent, but we felt that was eliminating himself in quality races away from the gates. And then, you know, I can't say enough about Ricardo putting him in position to show his talent, and what a difference that's made.
And that was stressed on Saturday, actually, in the recapping. And, you know, he's a four-year-old. And you know, so to go back to the gate and to stand him and talk about that, Steve, just a second, too, because, you know,
wanting it to happen wasn't working. You know, so, like, you know, how do we go about this and go it? You know, we knew what we wanted to do differently. It just took us several races to get to that point.
Well, and you also, you know, you were very gracious toward Linda Rice as well, and the work she did for Foundation with him as a three-year-old as well. And
no,
as a
the horse is 100%, you know, and even with his Dwyer win in those races and the great races she got out of him, he's 100%. And then just when a horse is that sound and that good of a mover and they're older, they're better.
Well, it's a luxury to head now with a win in your in for the Classic with this horse. I know how much it means to George Hall, and a big win, the first Jockey Club Gold Cup run at Saratoga. And as for the filly, I don't want to say it was a foregone conclusion, because that's never the case. But after that debut, opening day, you just knew that, okay, spin away, and we got all 7 weeks to get ready for it.
You know, a situation where a wonderfully talented filly, you know, came through Dad's program at El Primero, and definitely did not disappoint. What I've loved about the Gun Runners is, as good as they've worked, they race better. They're just like their dad. The afternoon's where it all counts, and they're showing up. And I've watched her replay multiple times since yesterday. A little stutter step away from there, 44 and change. Racetrack wasn't playing. And then she runs, you know, another 90 buyer. Second time out at 7.8. What a quality filly!
Exactly, and as opposed to today, where there's quite a few of the boys and the hopeful that are only stretching from 6 and 6.5 to 7, it's not such a simple leap from 5.5 to 7.
Oh, not, and really felt that we were up against it with that, with one easy race at 5.5 furlongs to a grade one. What step could be bigger? And what a special filly she'd have to be to have success doing it. And she proved to be that special filly.
Big win for L&N, Mr. Levinson, and for Ron Winchell, the Winchell Thoroughbred team, and TJ Fisk, and everybody. Stretching further, you talked about the Gun Runner.
I think the natural fit for her from where we're at with the two races here is to go to the Frisette.
Interesting.
From here. And try to... My Miss Aurelia won the Frisette for us, and then the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly. So it is doable, and I think that it's just the natural fit for who she is and where she's at right now.
Well, terrific weekend. Not done yet with the hopeful ahead, and you've also got a horse at Del Mar. Talk about that in a second. Steve, let's go back to last weekend, do a quick survey. One of the most memorable races. In fact, let me amend that. Three of the most memorable races from any single big day in recent memory between the Yaupin Firenze Fire Insanity, Jackie's Warrior just refusing to lose in the Jerkins, and then Midnight Bourbon laying it all out and giving essential quality everything he could handle. Talk about last Saturday.
I think, just like you said, just so proud of the effort put forth by Jackie's Warrior, Yaupin, and Midnight Bourbon. What else could you ask for from them? Just very proud of them. Thought they came out of their races in great shape and are unbelievably excited about all three going forward.
Hey, Steve, you've obviously, when you talk about all the wins and all the starts, you've seen horses and had horses involved in savaging incidents. Have you ever seen such a sustained attack by a horse?
The ten jump assault? No, I haven't. No. maybe it was the gloves. I don't know. Enough's enough.
It's something that, you know, there's countless people that had never seen that before, and then there's the people that have seen savagings but have never seen it go on for as long as it did. And Yaupin just had absolutely, he was completely unperturbed.
You can see he moved towards him just once, you know,
yes,
with the figure eight on, not being able to open his mouth probably, you know, which, thank goodness, and I'm glad nothing bad happened. It could have been a horrible incident. You know, you saw where Frenzy Fire actually grabbed his bridle there for a
yeah.
second.
Just crazy. And Jackie's Warrior, I mean, what else? How many times are we going to talk about you know, all
every time
out
you're
effort.
Running, my hope. Every
Unbelievable.
Time you're running, what I'm
Jesus.
Hoping. What a special horse. You know, just the class that he has and the ability that he has and his demeanor. What a package he is. What, you know, life is good. Extremely talented horse. What a showdown. And just the way that he handled and the outcome couldn't have been better.
Travers thoughts. Midnight did everything he possibly could do.
You know, I think, you know, we saw in the Preakness that he was headed in the right direction. The horrible incident at Monmouth, and then for him to just shake that off mentally and be able to resume what is obviously going to be a great career.
Absolutely, and plenty ahead. He'll run before the Breeders' Cup, yes?
Definitely considering the Pennsylvania Derby.
Very good. Wow. Which boy, that's already going to be tremendous. If he throws down, it ratchets up another level. And speaking of, you know, horses that have turned in big performances in closing stages of the meet, where are you with Bo Liam? Unbelievable.
Unbelievably talented horse. Kind of feel like we're kind of a similar position with Yaupin last year. Not going to make same mistakes too much too soon. Feel that he's up to most likely the ACAC at Churchill early October. Try to finish out the year with him in the Cigar Mile.
Interesting. All right. I thought maybe you would hint around a Malibu and year-end goal.
Well, he's a horse I think is going to stretch out. I do.
Interesting.
Trains tremendously. And he's... his first three races are impressive, and I think we're headed in the right direction with him.
So a little, but a little conservative going forward. No, not gonna, you know.
Well, he's, you know, maiden other than two other than. I think that, you know, that too. We're about to jump off into older Grade One winners,
right?
Want to have a nice, steady progression with him so we can keep him around. You know, he's just another tremendously talented Stone Street homebred, and sky's the limit with him.
How about Clairiere, Steve?
She's going under consideration for the Cotillion. You know, just a beautiful,
nice,
unbelievably bred filly that I thought ran solid as could be in the Alabama, and her best is ahead of her as well.
And, you know, I one horse that, not that she's disappeared, you know, since winning the Adirondack, but what's up with Wicked Halo?
We backed off of her.
Okay.
Her mother had won the Adirondack as well, and then I went to the Pocahontas from there with her, and it did not work out and went the wrong way. So I'm trying to avoid making the same mistake.
Wow. All right. So you get some real insight as to how, you know, how the top operation makes some of these decisions. And finally, Steve, Kentucky Downs today. You've got the Juvenile Fillies, Ms. Jameson with Julian, and Red Run in the Juvenile Mile with Joelle. You're in the Sorority with Gimmick at Monmouth. You've got Gunite, of course, in the Hopeful, and American Experiment out West in the Futurity.
Yeah, we're expecting a very exciting day. We love our chances. I think we're live all day at Kentucky Downs. Expect multiple winners there today, and feel good about our chances. Kind of an exciting thing. American Experiment's work with Echo Zulu a couple weeks ago was very impressive. And me and Scott were talking in the test where that Gazula kind of makes us very much look forward to American Experiment today in the Del Mar Fraternity.
Well, and I mean, there's other, it's crazy. You're also, you've got stakes coming up at, you're in at Parks today in that Roman Rachel with Regal Retort. Come back on Wednesday in the TV, one of the two TVG stakes. Snapper Sinclair makes his annual assault on Kentucky Downs. You're in the Indiana Grand with Still Charging Maria on Wednesday, too.
Yeah, well. We are blessed with opportunity, and we will make the most of them and try to go from there. But we're on a heck of a run. No reason to stop now.
Well, and any maiden this week that because you got them everywhere: Remington, Kentucky Downs, Louisiana Downs. What maiden are we watching for this week?
I think we're going to hope to win some stakes this week.
All right, it's a stakes week.
Try to get gaudy in the stakes weekend.
I won't. I know that I can. I haven't looked at Twitter, but I'm sure that they're listening and saying we want an Asmussen guaranteed banker.
I gave it out there. I have multiple winners at Kentucky Downs out of Cover Mutual. There.
All right, that says it all, Steve. A tremendous season here, and just a really great summer. There's been nothing but smiles and hugs, and finish strong. And are we going to see you in Kentucky Downs this week?
Yes, you are. Out today at Saratoga, and I will catch the last 4 days at Kentucky Downs.
I will see you there. I'm heading there Wednesday myself, so I'll see you later in the week. Thanks so much for a great summer.
All right, thank you, guys. Bye.
Steve Asmussen, everybody. I didn't expect to keep Steve that long, but there was too many things from Travers Weekend we didn't talk about. Let's take a break. We got a couple of things. This is going to end up being a crazier, busier morning than I expected. And really, thanks to Brett Brinkman. That was really fun to talk about Cilla and his own training career. Rich Migliore is joining us next. We got to catch up with Hammer as well at Kentucky Downs because it's a full docket there. I haven't mentioned yet really a sad and downcast piece of yesterday and the weekend. Before the, I think it was the 8th, was it the 8th yesterday or the 9th? Phil Gleaves essentially announced that he was leaving training, that Lily Bear was going to be the last starter of his career. And so we'll talk to Phil in hour three. If there isn't room in this game for horsemen like Phil Gleaves and Buff Bradley and so on, it's not great. Not good. Back after this, though, Rich Migliore, and I got to do my bonus pick for the Capital OTV Play of the Day. So I'll do some Zoom, and we'll have Mig in the background. A lot to do on this Labor Day Monday. And Shana Tova again to everybody. Happy, healthy New Year. With Rosh Hashanah starting this evening. Back after this. That was a full throttle hour. At the Races continues, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Horse racing fans, major Southern California thoroughbred racing action returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse for the LA County Fair Meet. Opening day is Friday, September 10th, with a 1 p.m. first post. Five stakes races highlight the meet led by the $100,000 Los Alamitos Special on September 19th. That weekend will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 18th. Two berths will be up for grabs to the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. Horse racing fans, visit us on track as we offer comfortable and spacious seating areas. Watch and wager in the main grandstand or at Burgard Sports Bar. And of course, our beautiful Vessels Club is fully open both indoors and out on our patio and terrace levels. Purchase your admission tickets at the main gate or online at losalamitos.com. It's a fun time at the track. And don't forget about our $1 early and late pick fours, plus our traditional $2 pick six. Big time excitement is ahead. The LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos. Opening.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.